Monster Man, episode 225, Mudman and Myconid. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the last two monsters from the M section of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, it's time to thank two new Patreon supporters. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if you do that, you'll get access to a range of different rewards. You'll get extra bonus content that's only available to patrons. At the $2 level, you'll also get my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is about the Deities and Demigod supplement. And at the $5 level, you'll get the opportunity to choose a topic for your own special episode. So thank you very much to Todd Chambery and Ted Przelski. I really appreciate your support. All right, our first monster for today is the Mudman. I like the Mudman because it is a creature that basically exists because of magic in the landscape. It is a natural effect of magic in streams, pools, and rivers. And that seems like something that would happen in the magical universe of a fantasy role-playing game. And it says that this can actually be quite small amounts of magic. So, for example, imagine there were some enchanted ruins and a stream washed up against them. It might carry that magic downstream and deposit it in the soil, and then ultimately that soil would form a mudman. However, the mudmen have rather a boring motivation, which is that they want to kill anything that's more mobile than they are, because they are the creations of this magical mud, and therefore they can't leave it. They're confined to these muddy pools basically permanently. They have a couple of good mechanical gimmicks. So, for example, they can throw mud at people, and if the mud gets on them, it slows them down. Do I remember correctly that these guys were in the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, or am I just remembering a cartoon monster which has powers like this? Ultimately, they can hurl themselves at someone, but if they do that, they'll die. Once your move is reduced to zero by getting hit with all these mud blobs, you begin to suffocate. It's a fun little mini-game. The problem with the Mudman as a monster, as a basic monster anyway, is that the winning move is not to play. The Mudman is basically incapable of being aggressive toward you, so all you have to do is stay out of the pool the Mudman is in, but by which I mean, like, tactically aggressive. It can hit you, but it can't come out of its pool and chase you, it can't ambush your caravan. So all you have to do is stay out of the Mudman's mud puddle. What you really need to do is create a situation in which that is impossible. So you need to be wading through the mud to save someone who's drowning, or trying to get the emerald chalice that's located on the island in the middle of the stream, or something like that, and you're going to have to get past these Mudmen in order to achieve it. I think that can be quite interesting. And I like the Mudmen visually, and I like them as a concept. Again, they take something that's familiar, something that we all understand, the idea of sort of getting stuck in the mud, of mud slowing you down, and they make it, monstrous and scary. And that, in many ways, is what a good elemental-type monster does. I also like the story about how they're created, you know, that they're essentially accidental offshoots of other magic, which I think, you know, should be quite common. So yeah, I like the Mudmen. I probably don't like them as much as I like our next entry, Myconids. Now, Myconids are a Dungeons & Dragons classic by this point. They are a species of intelligent, animate mushroom guys, and they have a lot of mushroomy type of abilities. One of the nice things about Myconids is that their sort of society, the thing that gives them their alienness, is described in a good amount of detail. So we learn about how Myconids are organized into circles and how they practice melding, which is essentially where they share their minds and memories, almost their dreams, through, is the word I'm looking for, mycelial connections. And that's kind of the main goal of Myconid society. If they're not able to do that, then they don't really see the point of things. This has the wonderful effect of making the Myconids feel different from the other kind of, you know, humanish monsters that one might find in a dungeon. I mean, Myconids are intelligent bipeds, but they don't have the same kind of tribal barbaric society that it seemed like every monster in the Monster Manual had. Instead, they have a society that's described, it's not described in an enormous amount of detail, but it's, you know, a quite sophisticated description compared to those other ones. Not that there's anything wrong with those other ones, but they're a little repetitive. We also get a range of different abilities that the Myconid spores have. And so the more powerful a mycan it is, that is the more hit dice it has, the more times per day it can release these spores, and the more different types of spores it can release. So the upper level, the animator spore, which basically creates a zombie-like creature, only the Myconid King can do that, but all Myconids can release distress spores. So this is a way in which they communicate with other members of the Myconid colony. Now, in later editions of Dungeons & Dragons, this seems to have turned into Myconids basically having a sort of universal consciousness, right? The idea being that if you look at like a fairy ring, where you have all these mushrooms growing in a ring, that's really a single organism, as I understand it. You know, that's one fungus which is manifesting a number of different mushrooms in that pattern. So the idea that myconids are basically different manifestations of the same central organism, which I don't think is quite what they're going for here. But having all the different spores gives the myconids, you know, some fun additional game effects. And they're not all necessarily deadly attacks. The pacifier and hallucinator spores are ways that the myconids, you know, can gain an advantage in combat, but also ways that they can avoid combat. So I really like the myconids. I feel like their core concept is interesting. I feel like the visual execution is interesting. The description, there's a lot of little detail in the physical description of the myconid that adds to it. So we hear about their stubby fingers and their pudgy hands. I think that's really good. I think they're a good idea and that they're well executed. And I think that mushroom men fit the kind of dark, damp, underground environment, you know, that so many D&D scenarios are set in. And so myconids fit rather naturally into that context, which I think also helps. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I feel like they're cool visual design is an important part of why people have held on to them. Mushroom people are going to walk the line between looking absurd and looking grotesque. You don't want your myconids to look like kind of Super Mario Brothers mushroom guys, but at the same time, you don't want them to look completely nasty and unrelatable. And I feel like the way they're depicted by Holloway here, which is more or less the way, I mean, they get a little more surreal in later editions, but they always manage to look exotic and strange and alien without looking necessarily threatening or monstrous, even though they can be quite dangerous if they're provoked. You know, I like the myconids. They're definitely an asset to players, something that they can maybe cooperate with, but maybe also have to worry about. Okay, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. Now, our next episode is going to be a little unusual because there's only one monster in the end chapter that we haven't done, and furthermore, it's not one that has a lot of detail to it, so we might spend quite a lot of the next episode doing some long-delayed answering of listener mail. Either way, please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thanks for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.